Well, good afternoon, evening. I'm used to being a little bit more interactive, so I may throw questions out to you, which I'm going to start with one. So this 1400 number is showing the backdrop is the city of Cincinnati. Can anyone tell me what that 1400 number might represent? Just a guess. That's a good guess, but it is the number of diet-related deaths in 2010 in the city of Cincinnati. Diet-related deaths are deaths that are impacted by what you eat. And we used the definer of those were from the Food Trust with medical professionals from across the country establishing about 22 diseases that they felt impacted, that were impacted by your diet. So that commercial you saw was, and I'm kind of taking a different approach to maybe some of my other presenters, and so hopefully you'll bear with me here. So we have an issue of food deserts in our city. Sounds like California has a great concentration of grocery stores. In Cincinnati, we don't have grocery stores in most of our vulnerable neighborhoods. So we have a food desert issue. So to draw awareness not just to individuals who live in food deserts, who frankly don't know they live in a food desert, but to draw attention to the policymakers and folks that can influence the changing that condition, we launched a campaign with the American Heart Association. That commercial was a part of the campaign. The other part of the commercial were these billboards. And these billboards said everyone should have access to healthy food. We deserve grocery stores too. What was interesting out of this campaign, we were able to work with our task force. So I think you shared that co-chair the Healthy Living Task Force, which is chaired by two of our city council members. Because of this campaign, we were able to get City Council to pass policy to create a Cincinnati Fresh Food Retail Financing Fund, replicating from the Food Trust Fresh Food Financing Initiative, as well as the federal HFFI. That fund will enable us to not only attract grocery stores to our food desert sites, but also to support our corner store work, which I'm going to talk with you about. So, but right now, we have to deal with what we have. So this map is showing you where there are corner stores that are part of our corner store network. And so we have about 17 corner stores, but don't have a little laser. But if you look at the household income, which is dark blue, so you see that, you know, the average income is about $13,000 to $18,000, primarily with all that dark blue, which is where we are working to establish Do Right corner stores. But it's an the income and the of the population is our lowest income communities of our city. We have 52 neighborhoods in our city. Not only are these neighborhoods without grocery stores, but they have the highest concentrations of many diseases, hypertension, cholesterol, diabetes, asthma. So in order to really address this issue and not wait until we could get a grocery store, we decided to launch our Do Right Healthy Corner Stores. And so our process is that we go into neighborhoods where we either have established relationships with CBOs, community-based organizations, or we work to develop those relationships so that we're not just coming into a neighborhood and saying, hey, identifying a corner store, but we're creating a sustainable path so that that neighborhood-based organization is part of working with the residents in the community. And so, you know, as you talked about researchers coming in and researching the condition, we train residents in our communities through the CBOs that work with us to identify volunteers. We train to go into the food outlet establishments in each of the neighborhoods. So that could be a grocery, it could be a corner store, could be a discount store. We train them to go in. You know, what's a little awkward about it at first is that, you know, they don't feel that they have the ability to go into the store and ask these questions, but we take them through a pretty rigorous training so that they can build a little bit more confidence to do that, because it really is better for them to go in and ask the questions of the store owner versus us. It's that process that then engages that store owner. and they're being engaged by the very person that lives in the neighborhood. And then the next phases include, you know, once that store owner says, yes, I'm willing to be a part of this Do Right Corner store, and you're going to work with me to teach me why I should sell healthier items, and that there is going to be a demand for those healthier items from the residents that live in this neighborhood. And then the final phases of our work in phase four, we're actually introducing new products. We're changing the signage. So in that outlet assessment, as well as that store assessment, we're looking at all of the signage in the store, and we're asking questions as to why they have a lot of cigarette or alcohol signage, if it was something that they had to pay to place, or was it free? So that's helping us be able to help them understand that, you know, we can change that signage if we can provide you an alternative to what's there that's free as well. So those are the four phases of the network, and now I'm going to walk you through the process. So again, I said we established the CBO relationship, recruit store owners. Our pre-planning includes the food outlet assessment, as well as store owner interviews, as well as observational interviews of residents coming in the store, so that we can get a sense of whether or not, you know, we'll ask some general questions in each store. You know, if you had healthier food, would you purchase them? Usually the responses have been yes, but then the next question is, well, when will that happen? And will it be here consistently? So we try to at least get a sense of what the expectation might be from residents, and then begin the process of getting that store owner to introduce a couple of new items. And then along that path, we're also educating the residents that are coming in the store on what maybe there are, what they can then request. So that's into the implementation. So our corner stores really are a partnership with the store owner and the resident. So we actually do nutrition tables every other week in the stores. We train residents who are volunteers that will help conduct the assessment to actually teach at a nutrition table. And they're teaching things from healthy eating on a budget, portion control, doing demonstrations on what eating healthy looks like, understanding a food label. We use My Plate, and a lot of the nutrition table activities are directed at the kids in the stores, because what we did identify is that kids were spending about $1.24 or 25 cents before school and after school. So if we could begin to educate those students that, you know, over time, we can get them to begin to purchase some of the healthier items that we're bringing in the store. So that's our premise, that we're not just going to convince the store owner that there's going to be a greater demand for healthier food, but we're also going to educate the consumers so that this is a partnership. And so far, you know, that has been more impactful for us to approach it as a partnership. Another part of this process in phase four is not just the consumer, but it's really working with the store owner. Most of the store owners maybe have themselves and maybe a part-time worker in the corner stores. So they're there pretty much around the clock. And therefore, they don't have a whole lot of time. So what we then do is work with them to, you know, get them to see how within their day they might be able to better understand, you know, how to respond to the needs of their consumer, understand how they may just shift an area of the store to become a healthier component of selling food items, not the whole store, but if we can just get one piece of the store to look a little different. They always ask, you know, what are we going to get for doing this? Well, we're going to give you free training. We're going to support you. We are, in the long term, going to increase your profits. That's going to be a long-term proposition. But we're going to work with you along this path to be able to understand how you can sell healthier foods and how you can then really be a part of changing the dynamics of the community as a whole. The stores that we are currently operating in, depending on their size and how well that store owner starts going through the phases, we do a variety of conversions. So I'm going to show you some examples of that. But before I do that, I want to, again, reiterate the nutrition tables and just show with you some of the stats. So in this year of 2013, actually beginning in, it was November of 2013 to this current date, we have had over 800 people, adults and children, participate in our nutrition tables. Not only do they have nutrition tables, we have a bulletin board in every store, and we have tips that are placed each week. And if residents have activities going on in the community, they're placed there as well. But it's a way of getting the consumer used to places where they can get some general information. So this is some photos of some of the transformations. So you see on the before photo here with all of the candy, and then the after photo you see Special K, you see water, you see those are soft drinks, but those are low-cal soft drinks. But again, just introducing and meeting people where they are with some new product offerings. And then this is an example of really changing a small space with just not a big investment, but you see the before photo and then see the after photo. We actually had students from a local school paint and change that kind of messy display there into a more positive, inviting display for residents to purchase healthier foods. So at this point, we actually have 17 corner stores in 9 neighborhoods. So again, those are 9 partnerships with residents and community-based organizations and store owners. So some of the challenges we've experienced are communication with the owners, cultural and language barriers, lack of technology. Most of the corner stores don't have POS systems. So when people ask us, well, how do you know if this is working? How do you know if you're selling? We have to use observation as a means of telling us that information. And we are going to introduce POS systems in about 10% of the stores next year so that we can really get them to actually record those sales and us be able. So right now we're using shelf space as our measure. So we're increasing the amount of shelf space in the store, and that's how we're measuring an increase in the healthy foods. And then the overall condition of the store, many of the stores are really not real clean when we start. So one of the conditions is that we work with them to do the basics, painting, cleaning the floor, and maintaining the aesthetic appearance of the store for the consumer. Our other challenge is distribution, and I was talking with a gentleman here, and distribution is a big challenge for us because we don't have the ability to give the price point that a supermarket can. So the prices are higher for us in corner stores, and so it's an ongoing effort. We've come up with some innovative solutions in working with hospitals with their CSAs, working with some of the local schools to purchase produce from them at a cheaper rate, but we look forward to a longer-term solution. The strengths are our ability to interact with cross-cultural barriers. Owners are able to assist in store recruitment. So we've had store owners in one neighborhood actually assist us in recruiting store owners from another neighborhood because they saw the value of being a partner in the network. And involving the community overall, because this is all resident-driven while we are the support system to the residents in the community. So our future plans are to address the food distribution system, marketing training for our store owners with our local chamber and African American Chamber of Commerce, and visits and evaluation with our partner, the Food Trust, who has really allowed us to kind of spark and take a little bit from their approach and tweak it to adding a little bit more nutrition education and more store owner education to our model. Our goal will be by summer of 2015 to double the number of corner stores, and in the hopes of actually then having a grocery store in one of the neighborhoods that we are currently working in and continuing to build upon the model. We are a unique organization in that we are funded by the major hospital systems. And so when I mentioned that we have been able to partner with a CSA in one of the hospitals, there are hospitals in every neighborhood. And so if we're going to need to use that distribution mechanism to help our stores, we have those partnerships that will enable us to do that. And so the exciting part of this work is that the store owners are empowered, the residents are empowered, and it's a more sustainable approach to improving the access to healthier foods in neighborhoods that do not have grocery stores. So that's the end of my presentation. I'll be happy to entertain any questions. Those are grants.
Those are grants.
Yes. Yes.
Do the store owners appreciate what
that takes? They do, because there are milestones that they have to achieve to get to those benefits.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. So, no, we don't just walk in and say, okay, what do you need? No, the first step is that they have to choose from our menu selection two items that are healthier, and it doesn't have to be a produce item. It could be a grain. It could be 1% milk, but they have to choose two items, and they have to keep those items for at least 3 months and show evidence of selling them. And then at that point, we come in and do a store owner interview and also do observations throughout a period of time over a number of weeks to see who's actually coming in and purchasing, and then to see if that's being sustained. And then from there, we assess what type of investments make sense for the store. So in some stores, we've done refrigeration. Some stores, we've done baskets, as you saw here. We've done signage in every store. And so we've taken down some of the alcohol and tobacco signage and replaced it with healthier signage, Eat Fresh, as you saw. That was painted, but we also have signage that way. Some of the stores that are in the process of conversion now, we're going to be painting murals on the outside of the store and changing the external appearance of the store as well so that it is more inviting for the consumer coming in. Then I'll... You know, I actually have a colleague here who she actually manages the corner store, so I thought maybe you could respond to the, you know, how the community is responding. Thank you. Our sustainability comes from increasing the knowledge of the store owner, continuing to provide incentive to the store owner so that they see the value, because at the end of the day, it is a business for them. And so we know that if we're not improving their profit or at least maintaining their profit, the business proposition is gone. You know, so far we've only lost two stores, and they were because their leases changed, so they left the communities they were in. But in our 2 years, if anything, we have to slow the opportunity down because we want to be slow and steady, and so that's what we're convinced that's going to be the sustainability, because we're recognizing their needs and we're working to meet those needs. If we can't meet them, then we'll work with another stakeholder partner to address their needs. And many of their needs have to do with their business operations. So we are partnering with both the Hispanic Chamber, African American Chamber, and the Greater Cincinnati Chamber to provide consultative services to the store owners. So that's an important part of the equation, though, is that relationship. And I think that's where the sustainability lies. Exactly. I mean, that is the cornerstone of our work as a whole, not just with the corner stores, excuse the pun, but that's how our work is improved and sustained over time, is that the residents are who get the buy-in. It's not, we're their support system. So that is really the key to our success. Yes. You. Yes. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
As far as I know, there is not an association for small stores in the state of Ohio, but there is an association of grocers. There's a grocer association. So I think that was the first question. What was the So, yes, at least in one of the neighborhoods, which is our largest African-American neighborhood, they do know that there is a grocery store that's being considered. And that has been a point of contention for them. What we have worked with other community stakeholders to do is ensure that, you know, you are a small business that this neighborhood wants to keep. And so your presence is not going to change because you have some unique component that you add to the neighborhood that a grocery store is not going to be able to deliver upon. And so in that store in particular, we're doing a lot more external work. Next year we're going to do a raised bed garden in that store so that we make that store be more responsive to the needs. And there's a public housing building on one side of the store that's going to be renovated as a part of a Choice Neighborhoods grant. So that store in particular is going to have a lot of other incentives and other ways of drawing consumers in beyond the grocery. That answer your question? And that's the only one that has that situation of the nine neighborhoods we're in. I don't know who had their hand up first. I'm sorry. Okay. It is very valuable to the store owner. So we do biweekly observations where we're just, and frankly, they know what they purchase and they know what's selling and they know what's not selling. So we are able to gauge that information from them. But what we've told them is we really would like a more efficient way to measure that those sales, and that's where we're going to use POS systems in a handful of the stores to do that, with a hope of doing more over time. So thank you.